Legoland Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the second episode of the Calcioland Podcast of the Week. And this podcast is brought to you by our great friends at Euro Fantasy Game, the home of the best football fantasy games. They have an outstanding podcast as well, website with a lot of great writing. I'm going to be writing articles for them starting this week as well. So before we get into the episode, thank you guys for all the great feedback on the new microphone. Unfortunately, today I left it at home. Don't blame Alex. It's my fault. I'll make sure we have the microphone moving forward. So again, sorry about that. But we have a lot of cool things to get to today on the podcast. We're recording this on Wednesday around 7 p.m. in Italy. Allison's on his way to Liverpool. We have a lot of your transfer questions to get to, and we have a fantastic interview at the end of the podcast with my great friend Adam Digby to talk about Ronaldo to Juve, how Rugani would potentially fit at Chelsea, what Liverpool fans can expect from Alisson. So I think you'll really enjoy that. But before we get to all that, you know, I want to remind everyone that we are a Serie A podcast that covers transfers as well. So I wanted to start with Serie A. It's just about a month away, the first game. Teams are starting their friendlies. The retreats are going on. So I wanted to be joined by our great friend, co-host, producer, Alex Goldberg, who has become a Serie A expert after doing this podcast with me for a year. So, Alex, as things stand, who do you think is the biggest rival to Juve going into the season as it stands now?
All right, Dave, well, I'm going to go with a trendy pick. And before I say my answer, I do think Napoli could either be second or third. I don't think Napoli will be any farther than that, almost just because I think a lot of people are now doubting them since they lost Sarri and they lost Jorginho. However, Ancelotti, as we know, is no slouch, and they have made some good acquisitions in the midfield. But as I said, I'm going with a trendy pick. I'm going with Inter. And it's not really about who they've acquired because, David, as we know, they've acquired a lot of players. And in my opinion, even though just like last year with Milan, it looks like Inter might just be acquiring a player here, a player there, not even paying attention to who they acquired. They just want to get a large quantity. I already said on a previous episode, I love the way Inter's doing it because they're acquiring a lot of players that were in league already, people that are already proven within the league. De Vrij, proven at Lazio. Nainggolan, proven at Roma, and also proven with Spalletti. Politano, proven within the league. But David, I'm going with Inter, not because of those acquisitions, but because of who they haven't lost. And that would be Milan Skriniar, who obviously had a tremendous, tremendous year last year. And throughout the whole year, we kept saying, well, if Inter don't lose him, that would be great. And they haven't lost him yet. And of course, up front, Mauro Icardi. So I think really sometimes it's not necessarily about the acquisitions you make. It's about the players you don't lose. And I think Milan Skriniar is one of the top, top center backs in the world. Certainly one of the top young center backs in the world. And we know Icardi will bang goals. And now he has even better players around him. Obviously, I didn't mention Lautaro Martinez, who I think could be really, really good. But he wasn't one of the in-league acquisitions I was talking about. So I'm going to go with Inter. Maybe it takes a couple weeks, maybe even a couple months for it to get fully running. But I think Spalletti will really know how to use all of these players because a lot of them are proven in the league. And David, in baseball, I hate to make a baseball analogy, but two of the most important positions are your battery, your pitcher, and your catcher. They have to be on the same page. And in football, I really think that if you build down the middle, you really will have success. Milan Skriniar is a center back, and Icardi is a striker. They're proven on Inter. I am going with the trendy pick. I'm going with Inter. What about you, David?
Yeah, I'm in full agreement with you, but caveat is I have been known to overrate Inter this time of year. So something I've done for years in a row. But yeah, for exactly the reasons that you say, I agree. I think they're the second most talented team in Serie A as it stands now. Now, unlike you, I could see Napoli taking a substantial drop. I think this is really a big change from Sarri. Ancelotti's been great in the Champions League and league play, maybe not so much at recent clubs. I'm really not sure what to expect there. Roma, you know, have made some interesting moves on the transfer market. They also ultimately lost Nainggolan, and Alisson's on his way to Liverpool. Those are two huge losses to them. So to me, it seems like Roma's trying to wait out Juve. They brought a lot of young players, trying to kind of set themselves up for after that. So for me, it's clearly Inter. We'll see how the transfer market ends. I'm going to ask this question to all the guests that we have on before the season starts.
All right, David, so let's move to a popular topic. You mentioned it at the top. I've seen the recent reports on Alisson and Liverpool. So what are your thoughts about the deal?
It's a very interesting one. And I know we interviewed Adam. We recorded this. We'll run it. And he said it as well. And I totally agree. I had it in my notes. This is a deal where really everyone wins. So Alisson goes to a champion league, to team in the champion league, a serious champion league contender. He's obviously going to get a big raise, goes to the Premier League, where I think he's going to really excel. Liverpool really address a position of a glaring weakness. I can't imagine them doing better than Alisson. Sure, it's a lot of money, no doubt about it, but Premier League teams, you know, can pay a premium for this. Liverpool leverage their great relationship with Roma to get this deal done quickly before someone else jumps in. Roma, you know, look, they lose a great keeper. There's no doubt about it. They get due a huge fee for him. Alisson's almost going for twice what Manchester City paid for Ederson. So that is obviously a great return. They didn't spend that much for Alisson, I think around 10 million euros, so a massive plus valenza. Two, Roma has had a track record in the past two seasons that they've had who arguably I thought was the best goalkeeper in the league two seasons in a row. That was Szczesny and Alisson at the beginning of the season. Nobody would have predicted that. Maybe they do that 3 years in a row. And I think for Roma, you know, granted, it's not good to lose a player of this caliber, but unlike Salah the previous year, where they were almost forced to undersell him for less. And look, you know, obviously with his performances, Liverpool got a great deal, but Roma had to sell him. Now they didn't have to do that with Alisson, so they held out for a great return and they got it. So I think this is a home run for all involved, and I'm very eager to see how Alisson does in the Premier League. The last thought that I have is, look, you know, I've been accused, and for good reason, a lot of the players from Serie A that went to the Premier League haven't panned out as well as I thought. At least Salah has made me look really good. And when I think of a keeper, I think it's much easier for a keeper to adapt to a new league than other positions. There are other Brazilian players at Liverpool, so I think this is going to work out quite well. Thanks to all our listeners who send in the great Twitter questions. As a reminder, you can send us in a question on transfers, Serie A, movies, TV, journalism, all that good stuff using the CalcioLand hashtag. So we got some pretty good ones today, Alex. So which ones are we going to go over?
All right, well, let's kind of stay on the subject of Alisson. Who could replace Alisson at Roma, and how else would they reinvest the proceeds of his sale?
So the clear favorite is PSG keeper Areola, who lost his starting job to Buffon. He has a contract expiring next season. He's the clear favorite to get this. I definitely expect Mino Raiola to act as the intermediary in this deal. He knows Roma and PSG really well, so I think Mino's going to work his magic and try to get this deal done. The other alternative is Sweden's goalkeeper, who started the World Cup, Robin Olsen. He seems, though, a little bit further behind Areola as the most likely. I could see Roma spending more of this money from Alisson than just the keeper. They're obviously going to make a big profit because getting Areola would certainly be a lot cheaper than what they got for Alisson, and maybe they'll go for that extra player that they need up front. Maybe they'll be able to reunite Domenico Berardi with his former manager Di Francesco. Let's see if that happens, but I do expect Roma to get a keeper and another fairly significant player, because again, you know, they've lost Nainggolan and Alisson. I think they do have to give their fans something to hang their hat on.
All right, David, this next Twitter question, I'm telling you, if I go on Twitter, it is just ultimate panic mode for Chelsea fans. So we got to ask this. Could Donnarumma end up at Chelsea with Alisson set to join Liverpool and Courtois likely joining Real Madrid?
Yeah, so I think there's definitely going to be a keeper carousel out of this Alisson deal. So important to note, as of now, we're recording this on Wednesday. Di Marzio, anyone else who I would consider reliable hasn't linked Donnarumma to Chelsea, but maybe this could happen now for a variety of reasons. So let's look at the negatives first. I definitely don't think he's an ideal fit for Sarri's system. Alisson's great with his feet. Donnarumma's the exact opposite. If he has one weakness, it's definitely the ball distribution. But, you know, he's very young. He could improve. You do get a keeper who's supremely talented. And his first season starting at Milan, he was absolutely sensational. I thought he took a substantial step back last season, but he also went through a very stressful period with his contract renegotiations, the complaining from fans. But if this deal happens, and again, I want to stress we don't have any reports of it, but I could see this maybe developing in the coming days, Chelsea would get a keeper that's supremely talented and that could get better. And look, if the alternative is bringing back Peter Cech, I mean, it's an absolute no-brainer to get Donnarumma. Now, the flip side to, and I know a lot of Milan fans are looking at potentially a big return for Donnarumma. The problem is, A, he's not coming off a great season, and also now his wages are really massive. He's one of the highest paid goalies in the world. He makes $6 million net, so every year he counts $12 million before taxes. Huge amount for a keeper, but again, with the talent, he could get a lot better, and maybe down the road those wages aren't as bad.
Oh, boy, what a stressful time for Chelsea fans. Honestly, it was a great time over the weekend with Sarri and Jorginho in, but this keeper situation is really stressing some people out. I honestly think, and I'm not informed like you are, but if they had just decided what they were going to do with Courtois ahead of time, and I know it's not that easy, but they really could have acted a lot better on the Alisson situation. Whatever. I love Petr Cech, but no, 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 you are not going back to that well, Chelsea. No, you need to be done with that. So let's move on, because I'm done with that. Could we see a swap of Donnarumma and Alvaro Morata?
So I've had a couple of Milan fans tweet me this, and I kind of see their point that Donnarumma needs to be used to bring in a great striker, which is really something that Milan needs. Now, it wouldn't be a straight swap, hypothetically, because Milan definitely needs to get a transfer fee for Donnarumma to balance their books. Donnarumma is a homegrown player, so it would be almost a pure profit. So maybe even if you don't get as much as you could have gotten for Donnarumma with the way he was playing before, but let's just throw a hypothetical number, and this is strictly hypothetical. Let's say Milan gets $50 million for Donnarumma. That's basically pure profit. To give you a kind of a frame of reference, say Milan sells Bonucci for $50 million. That's actually just a profit of around €15 million because you have to count the amortized value of what Milan spent on Bonucci. So there's definitely a big upside to Milan selling Donnarumma, but it wouldn't be a straight swap. Now, it's certainly possible that Milan sells Donnarumma to Chelsea, and with that money, they then go and get Morata from Chelsea. Chelsea as well can't take a loss on Morata after just 1 year, so hypothetically, that could work. Look, I got a lot of crap for reporting, and I never report stuff. The one time I reported things that Morata's definitely pushing to get out from Chelsea. Di Marzio since then has reported multiple times how much Morata wants to go back to Italy. So, you know, in the past, Morata didn't want to join Milan because of his allegiance to Juve, but time heals all wounds, and I think now he'd be open to it if the possibilities presented there for him.
Yeah, and the way I stand on Morata, and I think a lot of Chelsea fans, is if he wants to stay, fine. I think he could be good under Maurizio Sarri. But if he doesn't want to stay, it's not like he means so much to the club where we're going to beg him to stay. If he's happier in Italy, he's happier in Italy. And Chelsea then need to make the right decision with him and maybe use him as a piece like we just discussed. So, David, staying on Milan, how can Milan even be linked to players like Gonzalo Higuain after their recent financial issues?
Yeah, it's a great question. And look, though, if you listen to all the statements made by Milan, and even if you read the UEFA ruling, the restriction for Milan now is they have to have a balanced budget. So they basically can't spend more than what they bring in. And there's a lot of players that could leave Milan for big money. Suso, potentially Bonucci, Donnarumma, Andres Silva, Kalinic is for almost certainly going Atletico Madrid. So Milan could raise a lot of funds. And look, if they want to get back on track, and ultimately for Milan, the best way to get back on track is getting back to the Champions League, you also have to try to improve. And the best way to do it is with a striker. So they could really sell a lot of players and ultimately be able to afford someone like Morata. They've also been linked to Higuain. Not impossible, but if I had to guess, it's much more likely that Higuain is going to be heading to Chelsea with Morata potentially going to Milan. Morata also might be a fit at Napoli. It doesn't seem like Ancelotti believes in Milik as much as I do, so maybe that could be another landing spot for Morata. But if Milan does sell a lot of players, I think they'll definitely target at least one big name striker, and that might be the only big addition they make the rest of the summer.
All right, well, let's talk about a Milan player. If Leonardo Bonucci leaves Milan this summer, what does that say about the real reasons behind his departure from Juventus?
Look, it's a great question. Bonucci said that he didn't, it was time to move on. There were plenty of reports of him not getting along with Allegri. I mean, that was well documented, and Juve sided with Allegri over Bonucci. And I think now that decision looks really good for Juve. And then, of course, there's the personal reasons. You know, Bonucci has a sick son as to why he wanted to stay in Italy, not change his son's life. His family actually stayed in Turin, which is really close to Milan. So, you know, if Bonucci wants to leave now, and he'd almost certainly have to go abroad because there's no other Serie A team that can afford him, Juve that would want to bring him back, he'd have to go abroad. And look, you know, he's looking at a second season in a row without the Champions League. He's 31 years old. The project at Milan that he joined, everything seemed very exciting, everything on the up and up, and then it really wasn't on the up and up. There's a lot of uncertainty. So I get why there would be a lot of people pointing the finger at Bonucci if he wanted to leave, but I could certainly understand. And, you know, I'm in no position to judge his family situation. I don't know if his son's feeling better, and now it makes much more sense for him to go abroad. So, you know, to me, if Bonucci leaves Milan, and I think there's a pretty decent chance of that happening, I think there's a variety of reasons, some off the pitch, but I also can see why on the pitch a player of his caliber, 31 years old, is like, you know, I need to be playing in the Champions League and at the top level. If I had to guess, the most likely destination would probably be PSG. Maybe we could see both Manchester clubs jump into the mix, but it really wouldn't shock me if Bonucci left. Milan wouldn't make a big profit on him, but they'd save a ton in wages, like almost $18 million before taxes with him gone. So there'd be a big saving there.
All right, let's move to this question, David. Could Diego Godin, who's had a lot of battles with Ronaldo, could he join Ronaldo at Juventus?
So it's been reported, and I've been told this is true. He has only a 20 million euro exit clause, so an absolute bargain. Granted, he's an older player, but you look at Juve, they're in win mode now. Godin is like really, when you look at the way he plays, I mean, that's like the definition of a Juve-type defender. He'd fit perfectly. A lot of Juve fans were tweeting me saying, well, why wouldn't he just come to Juve? He can win. It makes a lot of sense. But, you know, it's a matter of perspective. It's also a matter of loyalty. Godin's very loyal to Atletico Madrid, very loyal to Diego Simeone. So, you know, if you're a Juve fan, you appreciate it when players show loyalty to Juve and they want to stay. So I think you also have to respect if Godin, and that's what it looks, it's going to be the case, that he's just going to stay put, that it's out of loyalty to his club. It's not necessarily always about trying to win, make more money, and be at a higher level. So I think, you know, it's always perspective, but I think we should appreciate loyalty, even if it doesn't impact our favorite team.
Loyalty went out the window when that Verizon guy switched to Sprint, so I don't believe in loyalty. All right, David, in all seriousness, will Ronaldo be part of Juve's U.S. summer tour, and will he play in the MLS All-Star game?
Yeah, so for those that aren't familiar, MLS does an All-Star game. I think it's going to be the first week in August where they play against a big foreign team, and this year it's going to be Juventus. Juve is also in the International Champions Cup, the U.S. tour they've done for a few years, but I've been told, and I've seen very reliable reporters that cover Juve, that he's not going to be part of the tour. He did the presentation at Juve and then went back on vacation. He's not going to return to Italy till the end of July, and then he's going to be training with the players coming back from the World Cup. So as it stands now, I'd be shocked that if he comes on the U.S. tour. Now, at the same time, the organizer of the International Champions Cup, Charlie Stiletano, does have a lot of pull. Let's see if Charlie pulls a rabbit out of his hat. But I'd be surprised. There's also, Juve would be scheduled to play Real Madrid, I think, on August 5th. That'd be a little bit awkward. So as it stands now, I don't think Ronaldo's going to be part of the U.S. tour and that MLS All-Star game.
All right, next Twitter question, David. Could Pjaka join Fiorentina?
Yeah, so Pjaka was on loan at Schalke. Juve owns him, didn't play that much there. I think it makes sense for Juve to see him play in Serie A, so they finally get a chance to play regularly. I think Fiorentina would be an intriguing place. He could be on a front line with Chiesa and Simeone's son. That's a really intriguing front line. Genoa is also a possibility. We've talked about, you know, how Wipedin was so cheap that they could likely be more. Some Juve players go into Genoa. Maybe Genoa calls in the favor and gets Pjaka, and maybe that could work out well. Look, Suso barely played at Milan, then went to loan at Genoa, played well there, and then established himself as one of the best wingers in Serie A, so maybe that's a possibility. While we're on the subject of Juve prospects, I've also been asked about Keane, the Dutch teenager that Raiola represents that was on loan at Hellas Verona. Juve, I think, is now open to selling him outright. Again, with those young players, it's basically a pure profit. I think they'd like to keep a buyback clause, so it wouldn't surprise me if Raiola sells him maybe to a Dutch team. Before we get to the final question, I also wanted to address that I was asked a lot about the clubs that went bankrupt in Italy this week. We saw Bari, Cesena. You know, it's a big loss, unfortunately. And, you know, I've seen a lot of takes on this, and, you know, maybe it's because I work in finance as my day job, and, you know, I'm old and pretty cynical. Look, it's definitely a big loss. I feel for the fans, but I feel like, you know, a lot of people that cover football and fans of football look at it as like a sport and are fans of it that way, and that's great. If people weren't passionate about sports, you and me, Alex, wouldn't be doing this podcast. But, you know, in a lot of ways, football is a business, and a lot of these clubs, unfortunately, in Italy, we see this time and time again, they're unfortunately kind of like Ponzi schemes. A lot of, you know, business owners do some shady deals. It's a great with football. It's a great way to kind of, I'm not saying launder money, but almost. And, you know, it kind of becomes this Ponzi scheme, and then at some point it just reaches the bitter end. I mean, I've seen it with my favorite team growing up, Padova. We went bankrupt a few years ago. It sucked, but, you know, within 2 years they brought it back to Serie B. So, you know, I hate to be so cynical, but you have to look at it, too, as a business sometimes, and it's not maybe the most trustworthy people that get involved with this. So I certainly have a lot of sympathy for the clubs. Bari has a huge fan base. It's one of the biggest cities in Italy. Cesena has had definitely their moments in Serie A, and it's unfortunate that we have to look at them as a business sometimes and not necessarily as a sport.
All right, David, last Twitter question. Let's move away from football. What are some of the most underrated rock bands?
So I got to tell you, two things that I love about the podcast is we've gotten a lot more people interested in Serie A. And look, I get the criticism from a lot of our hardcore Serie A fans saying that we need to talk more about the league and that we're pandering to Premier League fans. And look, you know, we've never hid the fact that we're a transfer news podcast as well. We answer the questions that we get, but I can't tell you, and Alex, you've seen this a lot of times. A lot of our listeners say, hey, you know, I came for the transfer news and then I got hooked on Serie A. So I'm very proud of that. And the other thing that I'm very proud of is a lot of our listeners are getting more into rock music. I'm old and I grew up with it. So I'm always intrigued to get these questions. So I'm going to tell you, anyone who's under 30, probably a lot of underrated bands wouldn't be underrated to people that are older. You're probably not that familiar with them. But I'm going to give you three that I think can fall under underrated, although to people my age, they're very well known. The first one is the Pixies. I've mentioned them many times, like a seminal Boston band. They went to see U2 live a few weeks ago. The only band they mentioned on stage were the Pixies. Kurt Cobain of Nirvana said that when he wrote Smell Like Teen Spirit, he was trying to write a Pixies song. Radiohead, they love the Pixies. Absolutely amazing band. They just don't get the respect that they deserve. Yesterday, they're on tour with Weezer, who I think is, quite frankly, a really crappy band. They were playing outside Boston. They weren't even headlining over Weezer. They should be headlining every night of the tour that they do with them, especially when they're playing here in Boston. So I love the Pixies. If you want to get into rock music, listen to the Doolittle album. That's what it's all about for rock. The other two bands that I'll mention are Faith No More, one of my favorite bands from the 90s. A lot of people, older people, know them for the song Epic, which was really one of the first songs to mix rap and rock. They did it really well, but their catalog is very varied. I think their three albums from the 90s are as good a trilogy from the 90s. Their singer Mike Patton is amazing. And the last band that I'll say that I think is really underrated is Ministry. They've been around for a long time, very eclectic catalog. Now they've become more of a straight-up metal band, but they used to be industrial, and one of the albums where they broke out called The Land of Rape and Honey is basically almost a techno album with some guitars, and it's really awesome. If you want to check out, get into Ministry, I would recommend that one. But I had to ask our pop culture expert, Andrew Barker, yesterday about underrated bands, and of course, hipster that he is, he knows way more than I do. He sent me a long list of bands. I barely know any of these. I'm wondering if he's trolling me and some of these are made up. So I'm going to read them out loud and I'm going to tell you I only know one of these bands. So I asked Andrew and he said Love, X-Ray Specs, Above the Law, The Waterboys, The Muffs, The Vibrators, WC and The Mad Circle, Fishbone, actually I do know those, Mountain, I know those as well, Comet Obscura, The Melodians, Tijuana No, The Lost Boys, and Kias, the other band that I know. And that was the first band from the guy from Queens of the Stone Age. He said he's sure he's forgetting some obvious ones, and I have a feeling he made up one or two of those. So that's the show for today. Again, I'm sorry about the microphone. I'll make sure we have it last time. I know you guys have asked us to improve the audio. It's my fault, not Alex. I also want to tell you guys, Alex and I are going to start a series of podcasts on another platform with our friends at Euro Fantasy Game. We'll have our first episode out this week. Those are going to be a little bit different. We're going to cover different leagues, not just Serie A, look at the fantasy perspective. You're going to hear more of Alex on the podcast. Alex has been doing amazing work. His videos are tremendous. We wanted to make sure he had more of a platform. I'll be involved. You'll hear me on every podcast, but they'll need more Alex. Look out for those. We also really appreciate your support, guys and gals. You guys have really helped us grow. Please keep leaving the reviews on iTunes. It takes 5 seconds if you're listening on your iPhones to leave us 5 stars. You want to leave a comment, we read them all. Please keep subscribing and plugging our podcast. We're really growing. We're right where we need to be, and we really wouldn't be here without you. We rely on you to be our marketing department, and we appreciate it. And now let's end it with this fantastic interview with my friend Adam Digby. So to wrap a bow around the Juve signing of Cristiano Ronaldo, I couldn't think of a better person to have on than our good friend Adam Digby. Those of you on Twitter, follow him at ADZ77. He's an Italian football writer. You can read him on many publications, including BN Sport USA, 442, Sport 360, BR Football. And even more importantly for this podcast, he is the author of the best book in English on Juve's history. It's called Juventus, A History in Black and White. And one of the things I want to chat about, Adam, is the historical importance of the Ronaldo signing. So without further ado, Adam, I'm thrilled to have you back with us. Welcome back to Calcioland.
No, thanks for having me back on, David.
Okay, so let me take you back to when the first rumors emerged. I'm going to be honest, I was very skeptical. I didn't think Juve could pull it off. I still had some doubt even the morning that the deal was announced. It just seemed very uncharacteristic from what we had seen from Juve in recent years. So I wanted to get your take. You've covered Juve for years. Nobody knows the club better than you. So let me ask you, how skeptical were you when the first reports on Ronaldo to Juve emerged?
Very, and for quite a few reasons, mainly that the story started in Tuttosport, which is, it's like, I guess for an American audience, it's like a sports version of the National Enquirer. It just seemed nonsensical. Like, for Juve to sign Ronaldo, I mean, he's a reigning Ballon d'Or winner. He's won the Champions League with Real Madrid. And then we've been through this with him before, where he was going to go back to Manchester United a couple of years ago, and then all of a sudden he signed a new Real Madrid contract. And like you, even on the day that the deal was announced, I was thinking surely like a PSG or Manchester United or Chelsea or somebody is just going to come and make an offer that Juve financially just can't compete with. And then we get to... We jump forward to Monday, and Ronaldo is saying that Juve was the only club he wanted to go to. It was the only offer that George Mendes received. It was the only offer they were prepared to discuss. And that to me, is, every bit of that is completely unbelievable. It's a rumour broken by Tuttosport, which we've seen Neymar to Juve, Messi to Juve, all of these stories a million times over the last 15, 20 years that Juve were going to sign these big players, and obviously they never arrived. Aguero, Van Persie, the whole thing. Then that no other club stepped in and tried to put in a counter offer that Juve were actually willing to pay him 30 million a year after tax. It just, every bit of it is, you would read it on any other website at any other time and just think, it's just not going to happen. And then during the World Cup final, Ronaldo is landing in Turin, and it's all systems go. It's crazy.
Yeah, I'm totally with you with that, especially someone like me that covers transfers so much. It never made sense, but, you know, there's always a first time for something. I never expected Juve to sign Bernardeschi from Fiorentina, seeing the history. They pulled that off. I never expected Bonucci to go to Milan, and then look what happened. So let me ask you about this. You mentioned that Ronaldo is the current Ballon d'Or winner, and for those of you that know Juve's history, they're a club that have had quite a few Ballon d'Or winners. You and I are born in the same year, you know, grew up watching Platini. We, of course, had Robby Baggio. We had Zidane. We had Nedved. But never, and you pointed this out rather quickly when the deal happened, never in Juve's history have they bought a player who at the time was the best player on the world. They bought some great players who took the next step, if you will, in Turin, but never someone of Ronaldo is now. And this got me thinking, and I have a feeling you've been wondering the same thing. Can you make a great case that when Ronaldo wears the Juve jersey for his first official match, he'll be the best player ever to wear a Juve jersey? It sounds crazy to think when you think of the history of the club, but I think you can make a pretty good case for that, and I wanted to get your take on that.
Yeah, I really do. It's kind of staggering to think, but you look back over the history of Juve, and they've never signed... Well, frankly, they've never signed somebody who was in a conversation for the best player in the world. I mean, I said that on Twitter last week, and people threw up the usual names. Michel Platini, yeah, he was a very good player in France at Saint-Étienne, but he certainly wasn't winning the Ballon d'Or at Saint-Étienne, and he wasn't the top scorer in Europe and setting all the records that he did in the 3-4 years that he was at his peak at Juve. Zidane joined Juve in 1996 for 3.5 million from Bordeaux, in the same summer that Alan Shearer went to Newcastle for five times that amount. He certainly wasn't in the conversation for the best player in the world. Roberto Baggio wasn't even a regular for the Italian national team in at Italia 90 when he joined Juve from Fiorentina. None of these players were at the level of Ronaldo. Pavel Nedved was a very good player at Lazio. He helped them win the League and Cup double. But again, he wasn't in the conversation as a Ballon d'Or winner. I think even when he won the Ballon d'Or, I don't think you would have said he was the best player in the world. He was the best player that season, sure, but I don't think you can say he was probably better than the likes of the original Ronaldo and Figo and other players at that time. As staggering as it is, he's probably the very best player that Juve have ever signed at his peak. I mean, they've signed some very good players at their peak, though. Luca Viale is one that immediately springs to mind.
Yeah.
But no one who, if you were sitting down to have a conversation about the best player in the world, no one who you could legitimately make a case for in the way that obviously you can with Ronaldo, no?
Yeah. But do you think even aside from how he arrived, he's the best player to play for the club, period? I mean, I almost think you can even go maybe that step further. And, of course, there was Sivori, Del Piero, players like that. I mean, you can almost make a case. I'm not sure they were as good as Ronaldo is now. Platini won 3 Ballon d'Ors in a row at Juve. Similar to Ronaldo, but this is really staggering, especially the way Ronaldo's been playing in the past year or so.
Yeah, I think those are the comparisons, aren't they? I think Zidane in 98 was excellent for France, but I don't think he ever quite reached that level in a Juve shirt. Baggio was great in the early 90s when he won the Ballon d'Or. Obviously, playing for Juve, he was great. Del Piero had a consistently great longevity to his career, where he was probably an 8.5, a 9 out of 10 for 7 or 8 years consistently. But with Ronaldo, you're probably talking when he and Lionel Messi retire and we get some distance away from their careers, I think they're going to be in the same conversation as Ronaldo and as Pelé and Maradona for the greatest players of all time. And I certainly don't think as good as Michel Platini was, and let's not make any missteps in how we assess Platini. He was the leading scorer in Serie A for 3 consecutive years, despite playing in the field. He was a Ballon d'Or winner 3 years in a row. I think that's the one player who you could say that, probably Gigi Buffon as well. I think you're saying to be the top scorer in Serie A and win the Ballon d'Or 3 years in a row and win the Euros with France and win the European Cup with Juve all in that 3-year spell. I think to say that about Ronaldo, I think he'll have to actually do it in a Juve shirt. But I think you're very right to say that the moment he steps out on the pitch, you can make the case that he is the greatest player to pull on that shirt at that time. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's really staggering to think. But I think, again, you can make a great case, and I think you've made a great case for the others. I think, you know, Del Piero, without the knee injury that he suffered, you know, he probably would have been at that point. But those are the other contenders. So let me ask you about this. We've seen what a huge impact branding-wise Ronaldo has had for Juve. You know, I'm based here in the United States. I've seen Juve talked about in ways that I had never seen before, both on television, even in people on the street. I've never seen that kind of exposure. So that's going to have a huge impact. I think, you know, you'd be hard pressed to find a player who can get Juve closer to the Champions League than Ronaldo. Maybe you can make a case for Modric, I guess. But where do you see the bigger impact for Ronaldo when you look at the pluses that come with this move for Juve? Do you think the benefit is more on the pitch or off of it?
I think that, again, it's like the conversation about the level of the great players. I think until he actually steps on the pitch for Juve, that's an unknowable quantity, isn't it? I mean, we know he's a great player. We know he's going to play well for Juve. But his actual impact in terms of can he win the Champions League and so on, and can he continue to win Ballon d'Ors while he's at Juve, is something that until he does it, we don't know. His impact off the pitch, we can already see it, and it's been staggering. He's selling shirts at a level that Juve have never seen before. I think they've sold close to as many shirts as they sold in all of last season already.
Yeah.
And you look at the share price going up by almost 35% in the week leading up to the official announcement of his arrival. You look at the Deloitte Football Money League with Juve Intense, and those clubs. I think it's Liverpool, Chelsea, PSG, and Arsenal directly above them, and it's within 60 or 70 million. I think you can make a case that by the end of next season or the end of the coming season, Juve will probably leapfrog all of those and be knocking on the door behind Manchester City. And then you're talking Barcelona, Manchester United and Real Madrid. who are obviously some staggering distances ahead, he's helping to close that gap to that big three already, and that's going to be huge for Juve. I think getting them into markets where Juve are not traditionally strong, into households that have previously not really given Juve a second thought. I mean, I don't know about you, but I've been tweeting stuff about Ronaldo this week and putting things on Instagram, and the comments and the replies are full of, I was never actually a Real Madrid fan. I love Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yeah.
I guess now I'm a Juventus supporter. Even JaVale McGee, who played for the Golden State Warriors last week, put on Twitter that he's going to start using Juventus on FIFA. I mean, that is ridiculous. Like, that's what we're talking about, is all these people who are just going to start watching Juve because of Ronaldo is going to bring an incredible income that Juve couldn't do that any other way. I mean, we've seen them have the Netflix series, we've seen the new stadium, we've seen them get to Champions League finals, and overnight signing Ronaldo, I mean, the guy has more Instagram followers than Juve do as a club. It's insane the level of scrutiny that's going to bring, and it makes no difference to his performances. He's lived with this for 10 years now. That's who he is. But the impact that that's having on Juve in terms of the social media reach, the shirt sales, the share price, it's unprecedented. And nothing, but I suppose, other than signing Lionel Messi, nothing would come close to doing this. And it's clearly a calculated gamble when Juve look at the level of investment in his wages, which that's the big issue. I think the transfer fee is a non-starter. I mean, Juve can make that back selling Lugani and Higuain this week, but the wages, talking 60 something million euros before tax, is a huge investment, but you look at everything already and it's going to pay for itself, isn't it? And that's before we even see him in a shirt on a football field, and that's a remarkable piece of business purely from a business standpoint. If God forbid, if Ronaldo gets injured in his first game as a Juve player, he still had more of an impact than any other player that they've signed in since Buffon.
For sure. Yeah, without a doubt. So let me ask you a little bit. You know the club really well. A lot of my listeners have asked me, where do I think Ronaldo's going to play in Allegri's system? You know the club even way better than I. So where do you think that's going to happen? And I'm assuming with Ronaldo, we won't see the usual Allegri thing where he's going to sit on the bench the first 6 weeks and then maybe play out of position. I won't exclude that, but that's probably not going to happen here. But where do you see him playing for Juve?
Yeah, I think Higuain was the same 2 years ago. For every other player, if you're listening, you're not really following Juve very closely, every other player in the Allegri era has had to earn his place and prove himself and show that he understands the tactics. And I think for the Cristiano Ronaldo, you can just forget that. Like Higuain, he'll go straight into the starting lineup. And I think mentioning Higuain, I think that will help Cristiano Ronaldo as well, because I think before him, Juve strikers were expected to fulfill other duties. They were expected to do their share of defensive work. And Higuain's certainly done more than he did before, but he's been allowed to operate at the very front of the team as the number nine. The play is building for him to score goals and create chances for him. And I think that's the play that Cristiano Ronaldo has become over the past two or three seasons of these. He's looked to add longevity to his own career. He's moved away from drifting out wide. He's stopped going deep to collect the ball. He's a penalty box goal scorer now. And I think that's what he will do with Juve. I think with Allegri, we've seen there won't be one system, whether it's a 4-3-2-1 or 4-3-3 or 4-2-3-1 that we've seen in the past few years. I think those will all continue with Ronaldo as the focal point of the attack. And I think the team around him, as we see with Portugal, with Real Madrid and with Juve for Higuain, the team will just be built to get the ball forward and to create as many chances as possible. And then Ronaldo is just the biggest possible upgrade over any striker you could have in that system, isn't he? He's perfect for that role. He's the best player in the world in that role. And now he's going to do it in black and white. So I think it's just a case of figuring out, I suppose, the options around him will be tailored to the specific opposition, because that's Max Allegri, isn't it? He's not going to play 4-3-3 in 40 games a season. He's gonna tinker with it. He's going to get in Dybala. He's going to play Mandzukic maybe a little bit. He's going to work in some playing time for Bernardeschi. And then, obviously, we've got the threat of Douglas Costa, who's been sensational since he joined Juve, on whichever side of the pitch he's being asked to play on. So I think it's a kind of a wait and see on the formation, but I think Ronaldo's role is completely clear. For all he wants to be CR7, he's going to be a good old-fashioned number nine and stick up top, and the team's going to play for him.
Yeah, I kind of expect it to play out that way as well. So you mentioned Higuain. You mentioned the enormous cost of acquiring Ronaldo, the wages especially. I mean, it really comes down to, per season, Ronaldo's going to cost Juve $85 million when you account for the gross wages and the amortized value of the transfer fee. To give perspective, Higuain accounted for around $35 million. They got to make up the Ronaldo money somehow, and even you mentioned Ronaldo's almost certainly going to play as a classic number nine, so Higuain's time at Juve seems to almost certainly be coming to an end. And I think there's been really distorted perspective on his ability, what he's done for Juve. I was reading a stat that no striker scored more goals over two-year period than Higuain at Juve. You know, the reputation for not being clutch, had some really, really clutch goals for Juve. The one against Inter was the Scudetto decider. Many of Napoli's players said that that's when they knew they lost the Scudetto, was when Higuain scored against Inter. So I think his time at Juve was very good. Granted, he didn't get him over the hump in the Champions League. I don't know if that's a fair standard or not, but I think he's been a very good player for Juve. So I wanted to get your take on his time at Juve and how you think he'll ultimately be remembered.
How he's remembered, I think if you speak to Juve fans who go to matches, he'll be remembered very fondly. I think he was huge for Juve. He always gave you hope in every game, because he was a dangerous player who could always grab a goal. As we saw in that Inter game that you mentioned quite rightly, it doesn't come any bigger for Juventus than scoring a goal that wins the Serie A title. It really doesn't. And it never gets old, no matter what anybody says about, oh, we've won seven in a row and blah, blah, blah. Winning the Scudetto is Juve's like reason for existence almost, isn't it? And Higuain helped them do that 2 years in a row. He was the leading scorer for the club in both seasons. He scored massive goals in the Champions League. In the semi-finals against Monaco, he pretty much did that single-handed. He was great in the games against Barcelona when Dybala scored two goals. He was excellent in the title running this season in particular. And I just think he kind of gets the unfair shake for, as much as you judge him on his whole career, seems to be just on three Argentina games where he didn't score. And to do the same for Juve, just to say, well, they got to Champions League final and he didn't score, is kind of ridiculous. Portugal won the Euros 2 years ago. Ronaldo didn't even play in the final. He was injured and the team won without him. But it doesn't make Ronaldo a bad player. It doesn't mean Ronaldo didn't do everything he could to help them win that trophy. And without him, they certainly wouldn't have won it. And Juve have won four trophies with Higuain. And for me, they wouldn't have lifted any of them without him. He was crucial in the Coppa Italia games against Atalanta last year. And he scored the winning goal in the Scudetto. He was phenomenal. I think he's an absolute monster of a player. I think it's a shame he's going to be probably sacrificed. But when he's the highest earner at the club and he's playing in the same position as a guy who's going to earn five times as much, you have to make those sacrifices, don't you? And I think Allegri would probably love to keep Higuain as a backup to Ronaldo, but that is ludicrous, really. Ronaldo's so fit that he's going to play so much, and I think with Mandzukic and then the other attacking players at the club already, I think you've got more than adequate backups for some of the lesser teams in Serie A. So I think Ronaldo, Higuain's wages and transfer fee, and then the transfer fees of probably some other players who will come on to talk to afterwards, will help to reduce the expenditure on Ronaldo. And and help Juve try and stay somewhat in the black rather than the massive jump into the red that they've taken to sign Ronaldo. But that shouldn't diminish what Higuain did for Juve. I think you can see a steady progression from Vucinic to Tevez to Higuain. And all those players, Vucinic, Matri, Quagliarella, all played a massive role in helping Juve get to where they are. And Higuain coming for 90 million euros, whether people like it or not, played a massive role in Ronaldo wanting to come to Juve, because it showed that Juve could spend big money. It showed that Morata could sign big players. And Higuain was very, very good for Juve for every time he stepped on the pitch, pretty much.
Yeah, and you pointed out it's been really a gradual approach for Juve to get to afford Ronaldo with their revenues as a club and also the quality of the players. And look, good players attract better players. That's just how it is. So I totally agree with that take. So let's talk about another player who's very likely leaving Juve and is probably going to be reunited with Sarri, his former coach from the Empoli days at Chelsea, and that's Daniele Rugani. You and I are pretty much, I think, on the same page with Rugani at Juve. I think a lot of people kind of disagree. I think he got his fair shot, but maybe playing with Sarri, it will work out. I think it would make sense for Sarri to try to bring in as many players familiar with his system, and Rugani knows it. So tell Chelsea fans, if the deal happens, what they can expect from Rugani.
It's difficult because I think it kind of depends which version of Daniele Rugani they get. I think up until the start of this season when Bonucci left, I was always impressed with Rugani. I thought he was a promising young player. I thought he had he was calm, he was confident, and he had everything he has everything that a defender needs to succeed at the top level. He's strong in the air, he's good with the ball at his feet. He's very good at timing his tackles. He rarely commits a foul. And he has all the tools physically. I think for me, the biggest problem I have with him is this season, mentally, he never seemed ready for me. He got a good, solid run at the start of the season. With Bonucci gone, he was a regular partner to Chiellini over Benatia. And then just before Juve travelled to the Nou Camp and took on Barcelona, Allegri dropped him and went with Benatia. And Benatia came in and slowly started to play more regularly and looked superb. Yeah. But Rugani kept coming back in, and he kept coming back in for four or five games in a row, and being given a good chance to earn that place. And at 24 years old, that's about the time you want to see him. No, I deserve to play. I belong here, I'm good enough. And he never did that for me. And then towards the end of the season, there was the game with Inter. You can see, if you watch the Perisic, well, the Barzagli own goal, Perisic cuts in from the left, leaves Cuadrado for dead, drives into the box and pulls back to shoot. And as he pulls back to shoot, Rugani shies away from the ball. He winces away. And for a central defender, that's unforgivable for me. And he did the same in the game against Crotone when the guy scored the overhead kick. The guy launched himself into the air. Silly that scored for Crotone. And you can see Rugani again. He flinches away. He lost Koulibaly for the Napoli goal. He was on the edge of the area, clearly tasked with being the man to mark Koulibaly. And Koulibaly got a free run and a free header and scored the goal that gave Napoli a famous win that really should have seen them go on to win the Scudetto. So for me, Rugani, up until it's really harsh to judge somebody on one season, but for me, this season with Bonucci gone, Rugani had every opportunity to stake his claim for being a regular at Juve. And he failed to take it. Now, going to Chelsea and being reunited with Sarri could see him revert back to the player I thought he was a year ago.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be surprised if he did. I think it's one of those rare deals that you look at where everybody wins. Yeah. Having said that, I think probably Ronaldo coming to Juve is another one where Juve are going to get a substantial transfer fee for a player who's clearly not in their plans. I think with Benatia, with Chiellini and with Caldara coming, who's a little bit older than Rugani, and he's got the experience now of the Europa League, where he's gone away to tough games like Lyon, Dortmund, Everton, and Sean, and played well against Napoli home and away for Atalanta in each of the past two seasons as well. So Juve don't really need Rugani. It would take away a chance for Caldara to grow, I think, if he hung around, because we know that Allegri's not going to trust to play two 24-year-olds in central defence. It's just not going to happen. It's a pipe dream. It's not realistic for any team in Serie A. I don't think it's realistic.
No, you're totally right. You're 100% right. I couldn't agree more with that.
People are like, oh, they're the future of Juve. You're going to have to wait 5 years before you could see Caldara and Rugani starting every game for Juve. It's a ludicrous notion. Benatia is still in his... Yes, he's going to be 30. Chiellini is 32. He's the club captain. Those two are going to be the regular starters. They just are. And then Chiellini will get a little bit older and retire. And then Caldara will be 26, 27, and he can take that place. And that's fantastic. That's how it should be. But back to Chelsea. I think they could get a player who's got everything to prove, with a manager who understands how to bring the best from him, playing in a system that he knows already. And that will give him confidence to go there. And he'll have to help the other players at Chelsea already, Rudiger being foremost among them, to adapt to playing the way that Sarri wants to play. And he'll be in a team that he can kind of take a senior role, even though he's a younger player, because he understands what the manager wants and he knows how to go on the pitch and deliver that. And if he does that, then Chelsea will have signed a fantastic player at a pretty good price. And Rugani will be able to stake a claim for a place in the Italy team. He'll be able to prove everybody who doubts him wrong. He'll be able to make a great career for himself playing in England if he can do that. And Juve certainly won't lose any sleep over it. As I say, having Chiellini, Benatia and Caldara means that Juve's central defence is absolutely fine. So if selling Rugani helps them afford Cristiano Ronaldo, I mean, and anybody thinks that that's a bad idea, then they're kind of idiots, really. It's like, selling him is going to help us not only develop Caldara, it's going to help pay for Cristiano Ronaldo. Are we even discussing this? Like, Rugani is going to be the fourth or fifth choice central defender if he doesn't go. It's a nonsensical idea to keep him if somebody's offering big money to let him go.
I couldn't agree more with that. So let me ask you about another player who's on his way to England, literally in flight as we're recording this. Now, you're not just a Juve expert, you're a Serie A expert. You write brilliantly about the league. So Liverpool, after Salah last year, have landed Brazilian keeper Alisson. I'm a big fan of his. I thought he was outstanding last season. I thought he was the best goalkeeper in Serie A performance-wise last season. So give me your take on Alisson and what do you think Liverpool fans can expect from him?
I agree totally with you there. I think he was the best keeper in Serie A last year. I think Buffon certainly dipped quite a bit. I think Chesney didn't play enough to be in that conversation, and Donnarumma was very disappointing, wasn't he? So I think he was head and shoulders above everybody else for me. And for Liverpool, it's a position that's been a problem for them for quite some time, hasn't it? They've gone through quite a spate of goalkeepers in the past five or six seasons looking for an answer. And it seems finally that somebody at Liverpool, whether it's Jurgen Klopp or somebody in their transfer committee, has just decided that, well, that's enough of that. Who's the best goalkeeper available right now? Let's go and spend whatever it takes to sign him. And that certainly seems what they've done with Alisson, who is a fantastic goalkeeper. He's a great shot stopper. He's commanding in his area. He's great at organising his defence. He's physically very strong and tough. I don't think he'll have any problems in the Premier League from that perspective. He's strong when crosses are coming into his area. He's good at set pieces. And he's very good with the ball at his feet too, which when you play the pressing and counter-pressing way that Liverpool play, there's going to be a lot of occasions where he's going to have to get the ball and pass it to somebody else. And he's very good. A very good footballer. Being Brazilian, he's excellent. He's very skillful. He's very composed. He's a great passer. His throwing is very good when he has to. And we saw at Roma two seasons ago, him making long throws out to Salah or to a player who could quickly pass the ball to Salah was quite a weapon for them. And obviously that's something they can look to replicate at Liverpool now. I think they've done a very good job of getting to him before Chelsea, because I think a goalkeeper will be a big must for Sarri, because I don't think Courtois is the most confident player with the ball on the deck, and Sarri really likes his goalkeeper to get involved in the passing too, as we saw with Pepe Reina. And yeah, for me, it's another one of those deals. I said it's all too rare where you see three people, all three parties in a deal be satisfied. But Alisson gets a great move at a perfect time in his career. Roma get a substantial transfer fee that Monchi, who used to be a goalkeeper himself, will have no problems in finding a replacement at Roma. Although I would kind of question them selling Skorupski. And then doing this, I think that's probably a potentially very good keeper that they've let go, and it'll be interesting to see who Monchi goes after. But Liverpool get a fantastic player filling a huge position of need, and it really is a great move for me. I can't see any problems with it whatsoever. I think Alisson is a great player who arrives at the perfect time, just after the World Cup. He'll have no concerns about how it might jeopardise his international career. And fans in the Premier League will get to see just why this guy keeps Manchester City's Ederson, who's another very good goalkeeper. But for me, he's not a patch on Alisson, and they'll get to see why Alisson keeps Ederson out of the Brazil national team.
Yeah, you know, when I was thinking of Roma, two seasons in a row, they had arguably the best goalkeeper in Serie A. I mean, Szczesny at Roma was amazing. Alisson the following season, I think no one would have predicted that at the beginning of the season. Maybe there's a, you know, you can't do two without three, so maybe they hit a home run out of the blue again. So let me close on this, Adam. This is a question I'm going to ask all of our guests before the season starts, because I think there's really a potential wide range of answers. Even before Ronaldo, I think Juve was definitely a step above the other Serie A teams. We've seen a lot of changes at Inter, Roma, Napoli, and whatnot. So let me ask you very simply, as it stands now, which is the second best team in Serie A?
It's a difficult one, that, because I think you have to exclude, until we see it on the pitch, I think you have to exclude Napoli, because everything that made Napoli special was Sarri, his style, and Jorginho too. I think the two go hand in hand. So now they've lost their most influential midfielder. They've lost their goalkeeper in Reina, as I said, and they've lost their manager in Sarri. And Carlo Ancelotti is a fantastic, fantastic coach, but he'll have to reconfigure that team. So I can't realistically say them. And this is where it gets difficult for me, because on paper you look around and you think the answer's Inter.
Yeah, I know you don't want to pick them, but I think you can really make the best case for them. I know it pains you to admit that.
No, it doesn't. I think they have continuity through players like Handanovic, Skriniar, Perisic, Icardi. I think the two things that stop me from saying Inter are nothing to do with being a Juve fan. I think the first one is window closed before we can say that, because it wouldn't surprise me if one of their big players was sold this summer. So I think you have to have that caveat, and then it's Inter as well, and they always kind of find a way to not be as good as you think they're going to be. So all of that, even though we just discussed them selling Alisson and we don't know who we're going to play in goal, I think you have to say Roma, because I think Di Francesco did a fantastic job in his first season when he lost. For all we just said about Napoli, a year ago we were sitting here, if we had this conversation, you look at Roma and they lost their coach in Spalletti, who meant so much to that club. They lost Francesco Totti, who meant more than anybody ever has probably to Roma. They lost their best defender in Rudiger. They lost their most influential attacker in Solar. They lost midfielders like Paredes, who were very important to them as well. During the season, they lost Emerson to Chelsea. And yet they were still there in third place in a season where you think they should have been consolidating, maybe taking a backward step before they could take a forward one. And then you look at the business that Monchi has done already, and then you look at now he's got 75 million in his pocket that he's just recouped from selling Alisson. And if he's given that to reinvest and he goes and strengthens the team that he has already, while finding another goalkeeper. And I think if you ask anybody who's followed Monchi's teams at Sevilla, and then obviously not with selling Chesney, but not taking up his option on Chesney and opting for Alisson instead, the man knows goalkeepers. He was one himself for a long time for Sevilla. He won't find any problems in replacing Alisson. I think you have to say Roma are probably the second strongest team. And that comes with a caveat of Napoli could be better if Ancelotti gets his act together immediately. Inter could be better if they hold on to everybody and don't find a new spectacular way to self-combust. But I think for me, if I had to say who I think will come second in Serie A next season, I think it could well be Roma, because they have everything it takes to succeed, and they have a second season now with a manager whose first season was above and beyond all expectations.
Very, very interesting. So, Adam, thank you so much for joining us. It's always a pleasure to chat with you. Definitely, everyone listening, check out Adam's great writing on Serie A. I think there's going to be a lot more people following the league with Ronaldo, and Adam's one of the best at it. So, Adam, thank you so much for joining us. I look forward to chatting with you again very soon.
Thank you, David. Thanks for having me on again.